Welcome to Building Better Relationships at Home and at Work with Angela and Patty podcast. This is Patty, a leadership and work-life balance coach from Arizona, USA.
And this is Angela, love and relationship coach from Sydney, Australia. And we are building better relationships with you.
Sharing new perspectives on being heart-centered at home and at work.
So you can draw on your inner power to make your relationships and the world a better place to be around.
The Building Better Relationships Journal and Meditation. We created the Building Better Relationships Journal and Meditation so you can magnetize the better relationships you want and focus on the positive role that you have in creating a better life through your relationships. We are excited for you to discover the gold within you that can help you manifest the love we all crave. The Building Better Relationships Journal has coaching questions that help you listen to the truth of what you want and what helps you to be empowered in love. The Building Better Relationships meditation is designed to strengthen your heart's ability to be that change you wish to see in the world. Why not download it now and think of it as a gift to those you love? If you love journaling and meditation, this is for you. In this podcast episode, we will have a special guest, Whitney Cobrin. Whitney is a dating and relationship expert and coach who helps single, divorced, and widowed women to date confidently and build healthy relationships in the modern world. Combining her background in psychology and matchmaking with her own personal experience, Whitney offers a uniquely skilled and empathetic approach to healing and cultivating healthy love.
Whitney's Dating Done Right coaching program helps and begins with holistic healing that aligns the whole self, the mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual, and then goes on to instill the practical skills needed to date confidently and attract your ideal partner. If you feel stuck, frustrated, avoidant, or sad when you think about looking for love, we invite you to apply for a complimentary one-on-one dating in a digital world strategy call with Whitney today, because there is a better, healthier way to date and you don't have to be alone on your dating journey.
Welcome, Whitney. We're so excited to have you and to learn more about dating.
Yes. Welcome, Whitney.
Thanks so much, Patty and Angela. It's lovely to be here.
So I would like to know, how do you build a genuine connection and a new life with someone who loves you for you?
That is a layered question. And it's really interesting because nowadays we live in this modern world where everyone has become so individualized, right? Nobody wants to be stereotyped or prejudged, and everybody is a unique snowflake, and it's become harder and harder to find a match to every single unique snowflake out there. And yet that's exactly what we need to do. I have found that people that are not their own unique person, that try to dumb things down or pretend to be something they're not, or you know, they don't want to intimidate people, so they tone down. That doesn't work. And it also, you know, doesn't work to be looking for somebody out there who is perfect, who is checks all the boxes and they're everything you ever wanted. And, you know, we often chase after this perfect person, even if that person isn't giving you the love you need. So I think that I could tell you a lot of reasons why it doesn't work and what's not working out there. But to answer your question, to say, how do we find someone that loves us for who we are? I mean, I would say in three short steps, it would be to really know yourself and accept yourself and love yourself. That's number one, because if you go out there looking to be validated, looking to be proven that you are worthy of love, then that's just going to fail over and over again. And I know because I've been there. That was one of my patterns that I did in my 20s and 30s. And so step one, know and love yourself. Step two is we've got to release the past. We have to let go of what our father did to us and what our ex did to us and what we learned from our marriage, or else we will be so guarded and protected that we'll never let anybody in again. So it's important for us to do the work, the internal work, to recognize what we're carrying around with us, what's causing, you know, limitation or fear and holding us back. And then the third step, I would say we need to have the right skill set, because dating has changed. And the way that we date now in this modern world and using dating apps, or if even if you don't use them, they still play a part. They still play a part in the dating game. So knowing how to text, how to communicate, how to use modern technology as our friend to find events where you might meet someone in person even. So I would say those are three steps that I think are absolutely necessary to be able to find somebody that you can really have a loving, awesome relationship with.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Well, getting to the digital age, I'll ask this question. What are some practical skills to actually love dating in this modern world and digital age?
That's a good question. So the first thing that popped out to me was that you said to love dating.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think a lot of people are very far from it. It's like they hate dating. They dread it. It's an opportunity for all their insecurities to be heightened, right? It's an opportunity for their rejection sensitivity to be exploding left and right. It causes anxiety, and that's my favorite thing in one of my favorite things that I do is to help people enjoy dating, to help them really have fun with it. So you asked about, you know, what are some tools or some skills? And one of them that I found is embodiment, feminine embodiment. So the women that I work with, I teach them about our masculine and our feminine energies and how we all have both within us, every human. And most of us, we don't really give time to allow our feminine side to be expressed, because it doesn't create a lot of productivity in our work. It doesn't fit the standards of, in this modern world, what we're supposed to be doing, right? But tapping into our feminine energy, doing our feminine flow, allowing ourselves to dance and feel and be receptive, it changes everything. And not just in the moment, like that day, but if you begin to practice it, much like if you start a meditation practice, it will change your life, not just the moment that you're meditating, but later on it has lingering effects. And that's what I have found with the feminine flow practice, is that it starts to make life more enjoyable. And it starts to build your confidence and you feel more resilient. And it's one of the key skills that I have found really helps to make dating more fun and more enjoyable. You can go out and be lighthearted about it. Some other skills, keep dating until you get into a relationship, right? A lot of people are like, well, I can only date one person at a time. But what they're not realizing is that dating someone is not the same thing as being in a relationship with someone. And if you've only been on one or two dates and you're treating that person as if you have a relationship, you have unrealistic expectations of this person. And that causes a lot of pain and trauma. So learning the skill of taking it easy and going slow and recognizing the difference between just dating someone versus being in a relationship, that can really help. What else makes dating fun? Taking it lighthearted, making it your mission. So this is a big thing that I had to learn and that I teach is when you go on a date, the goal of the date is not to get this person to like you. The goal is not to be on your best behavior and to get, you know, get the next date and to find your husband. If that's your goal, number one, you're going to be disappointed a lot because most dates are not going to turn into the one and only. The other thing that happens is you often end up being kind of fake and like, oh yeah, I like that too. Yeah, sure, great. And it's not authentic. Another is you often will end up spitfiring questions one after another and the date feels more like an interview than like a date. Have you been on those? I see you laughing, Angela.
Oh, I'm just thinking how in the modern world people approach dating like a job versus fun. I just find that hilarious. I think that's really funny.
Yeah, it happens a lot because, you know, we're trying to use our analytical brain in love. And those two things, you know, love is an emotional thing. Like, yes, there needs to be a little bit of an analytical component, right? Like, we can't just fall in love with the most random person that we have nothing in common with and it's never going to work. But we also can't just put too much analytics into it and trying to figure everything out. And it loses the spark. And I worked as a matchmaker for a while before I became a coach, and now I still work with a matchmaking company and I coach the clients while they're going through the matchmaking experience. And what I have found is people think the goal of the date is to find your partner, right? To get the next date, to meet your future husband. And that just doesn't work. I tell people the goal of your date should be two things. One, to practice being your most authentic self. So being honest about how you feel and how you feel about things and being congruent with your messaging, right? It's a lot of people think that, well, I'll just say the goal. The goal is to be your most authentic self and to have as much fun as you can. That's your goal on every single date. And if you do those two things, then it's a success. You've completed your goal. And it's so much more likely to lead to the right kind of relationship, right? Because nobody out there who's single is just looking for a warm body to fill a space. I mean, okay, yes, there are some people that are looking for that, but that's easy to find. There's no challenge for most people to just find a warm body if that's what you want. But what we really want in this world is someone that sees us, who sees our positives, who sees our flaws, who can accept us for who we are anyway, that knows us deeply, that can be our cushion and our softness and protection in this world, right? We want a partner. We want somebody that can fight for us and fight with us and be supportive with us. We're not just looking for, you know, and also we have to not be annoyed with them. We have to be able to tolerate them and all of their weirdness. And there's just so many factors that come into play. Yeah. But yeah, we should really love dating. We should enjoy the process. It's like, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I notice all these similarities between the sales and marketing process and the dating process. And it's like, if I go out there with this, oh God, I can't believe no one's buying from me and meh, meh, meh. And if I'm all negative and go out there and like try to get new clients and from that point of view, it's not going to work. No one's going to want to work with me. And it's the same thing with dating. If you go out there like, oh, all these guys are such jerks and nobody wants a real relationship anymore and they just want to hook up, what's wrong with the world today? then you're not going to find what you're looking for. And self-fulfilling prophecy and confirmation bias, I mean, all these things have taught us that what you go out there with, you're more likely to attract.
Interesting to hear you explain how people have lost that understanding that dating is not a relationship, that journey of dating is its own sort of phase or experience, or and it's not a relationship. I found that fascinating, Whitney. So Patty and I are from a different era where dating was different. So can you enlighten us on what's the current nature of dating in the digital age?
Yeah, well, it's safe to assume that when you first meet someone that they're dating other people, male, female, whatever. Most likely they're dating other people. And it takes time to get to know people, right? If I know, Patty, you've been married 30 plus years, but most of us have a number of exes, people that we tried to date, people we did date, people we had relationships with. And we can look back and the person we thought they were in the beginning was not the person that they turned out to be. And maybe even if you've been married for a long time, you see that. You're like, my partner is not the same person that when I first met them. It takes time to get to know someone. And so it's absolutely ridiculous when someone comes home from a first date or a second date and they're like, oh my God, I met the one. He's the one. He's amazing. He's perfect. And you're picking out your kids' names. And it sounds kind of silly, but like we really do this. So many of us really do this. We meet so many duds, because that's another topic here is that, you know, because of online dating, it's like everybody's there. And it's like, it's not very curated, which is something that I'm trying to work on and help people with. Like, how can you find the people that are actually looking for a relationship and serious? And this is why matchmaking is really still hugely popular. I won't even say it's made a comeback. It's never really gone away, because what matchmakers do is they sort through all of the riffraff, you know, all of the people that are going to just waste your time. And it's not foolproof 100%, but oh my gosh, it's amazing how much time it does take to find the potential people and talk to them and sort them through and ask the questions that need to be asked to get to just a couple of matches for somebody. So yeah, I don't know if you guys are familiar or watched the TV shows about it or.
One show, what was it called? Married at First Sight. I thought that was very interesting because I would have never thought about that for me personally. And it was interesting. And I didn't know much about the dating world as well, but how they did these questionnaires and met with them and all of these things and how they had a lot of things in common. I was kind of surprised, Whitney, that with all the psychological stuff, that still some did not make it or did not fall in love with each other.
I actually liked that show too, because they really tried. Like, the show was not there just to create drama and, you know, because some of these shows like The Bachelor, like they just want drama. They want all the drama. But Married at First Sight, they really cared about these people and their success. And they had, you know, these expert psychologists, but we'll always have free will. And sometimes people just aren't, you know, there's that factor that we can't quite predict. When I was matchmaking, there were some people that I was sure that they were going to hit it off. I was like, these people, they're so good for each other. And then they wouldn't. And then I remember a couple of couples that I was like, oh, I don't know, we'll see what happens here. And one of those, they're married today and they keep in touch with me. And I just think it's funny because I didn't have a feeling. I didn't know for sure. It was just like, well, this could work. We'll see. So there's definitely a sort of magical element that comes into play. But with so much working against us, we kind of have to create the mindset to begin with to have an intention for the relationship you want, to know how you want to feel with somebody, so that when you find it, you know what you have, what you've been looking for, and you don't have to keep looking, because that's another pattern. You know, I have these 13 different damaging dating patterns, and one of them is the grass is greener. And it's just someone that's never quite happy with who they have. And even as great as it is, they're like afraid to commit, because what if I commit to this person and then someone better comes along? And, you know, this obviously comes from previous experiences and things that get, but those are interesting. I love discovering early on what somebody's patterns are, because I don't believe in one size fits all dating advice. Some people, you know, they are chasing after their ideal person and they're accepting crumbs and leftovers and they're not asserting themselves. And so they need to be stronger. They need to have better boundaries, right? They need to be more clear about what they will not tolerate. And then there's other people that are like falling under the chase me pattern or the not perfect, I'll pass pattern, where they're just rejecting everyone left and right. And they're like, no one's ever good enough. And so they need to stop putting so many boundaries and so being so hard on everyone. And so I have found that, you know, people have different challenges and need a different approach. And it's usually the thing that they don't want to do. Right? It's the thing they don't want to hear. It's I'm just really picky because I, you know, blah, 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 whatever their reason is. But usually if someone's really, really picky, they usually are their own worst critic and they're very judgmental of themselves. And it's a projection of their own insecurities and their own self-judgments. And it's like, well, if he leaves me, well, he's only 5'6". Like, I have to leave him first. And then it turns into like, he's just too short for me. But really, it's like, he's a really awesome, great guy. But if he leaves me, then a short guy left me. And, you know, there's just so many layers to this.
Wow. Whitney, what is the commitment conversation? I've seen that you talk about that, and I was wondering, what is it? How do you get there? Those kind of things. Yes. And I know that you should start that conversation at the very beginning by listening to some of your videos and how you talk about it.
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing is you don't really even have to get there. You can have the commitment conversation on day one, first date, first time you see someone. And that's what I recommend, is to set the tone as early as possible. Because what you don't want is 4 months into dating someone, you're seeing each other all the time, and then he introduces you as his friend. And you're like, what? I was at your house last night. What? We're not just friends. And you never talked about it. You never had a conversation. And then it becomes, you know, you're angry and you're upset. And it's, well, what are we? And am I just wasting my time? And blah, blah. So to avoid all that, as soon as you meet someone for a date, you tell them two things, what you're looking for long term and what you're looking for short term. So you are very honest about what you're looking for. So it always comes up, right? What are you looking for? What do you hope to find? What's your dream? Whatever. Like, it will come up in conversation in a date. And you tell them very honestly, if that's, I'm looking for marriage and kids, I want to have kids. Or if it's, I've been married and I don't really care about marriage anymore. I just really want a partner long term. Or I really want a commitment. We'll see where it goes. Like, whatever your truth is, you need to be able to just openly, honestly tell them exactly what it is that you want long term. But we don't just leave it at that, because the problem with that is, to some people that might sound like, oh, she's trying to sink her teeth into me, or, you know, why are you coming on so strong? Like, I just met you. I don't know if I want to get married and have kids, and like, whoa, hold on a minute. Like, I don't know who you are. And that's the thing, is that other person might be hearing that as if you're saying, I want that with you. And that can be really scary and off-putting. So that's why I say you tell them two things, what you're looking for long-term and how you're going about it in the short term. So you say, I'm looking for marriage and kids and whatever, the whole nine yards. But for now, I'm just dating. I'm just taking my time to get to know people and having a good time. And when I meet someone that we both want to be in that committed relationship, then I'll know. But for now, I'm just out there dating and meeting people. So that way it takes off the pressure of like, rawr, I'm coming after you and this is what I want. It also lets them know, hey, I'm going to be dating other people until you lock this down. Like until we have a conversation, you don't know that I'm going to be committed to you. And so it creates a desire and a necessity to have that conversation earlier than like way later. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes. So say that you've been dating and you've been dating a few people at the same time, and there's one that you really like and you think that likes you. How do you have that conversation that you want to be committed with them? How do you start that? And how do you handle anything that happens from that? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. I mean, number one is authenticity, right? Whatever we're feeling, we need to be able to communicate. And that's one of the major skills that, I mean, I talk about communication a lot throughout the program. You want to be authentic and honest about it. And usually there's some jumping off point to start it, right? Like he's asking you about a date and you're busy and he's like, well, what are you doing? Are you seeing someone else? And you're like, that's none of your business. Well, maybe we should talk about this. And then, you know, that's kind of an ideal scenario where, because as much as we don't want to admit that there's differences between men and women and masculine and feminine energies, there is something innate and primal inside of most of us, where the masculine energy, you know, if they can just have an easy relationship where they don't have to have any commitment or, you know, pressures or whatever, like that's what they'll do for as long as they can. And yet they want to kind of like have you to themselves usually. And then there's so many exceptions nowadays that you can't generalize everyone, but most of the people that do fall into this kind of old-fashioned or typical male-female dynamic, they're not even accepting it when it is true for them. So it's an interesting Wow. kind of study to recognize like what it means to be feminine and a woman and what it means to have a masculine partner. We want different things. We have different primal desires that go back hundreds of thousands of years into our evolution about how we carried babies and all of these things. And there is this evolutionary psychology that is at play. It doesn't mean that it's an excuse for people or whatever. There are exceptions, but there's still this deep primal thing that we can't really get away from, where often it'll be like, and sometimes it's not just the male-female dynamic. It's one person is kind of chasing the relationship and the other person's kind of going away. So there's a lot of talk now about attachment styles and insecure attachment and having, you know, one partner be avoidant and always kind of one foot out the door and the other partner being anxious, like, hey, where are you going? What's going on? And that is not healthy. It's not a good dynamic. I've been there too. The reason I'm a dating coach now is because I had all the challenges and all the problems. And through the help of a coach and reading a ton of books and learning and practicing and therapy, I was able to turn around my own experience in dating and actually have healthy relationships. And so now that's what I do for other people. But having this commitment conversation should not be a scary, awful, ultimatum, pressured thing. It should come up in conversation naturally. It should feel natural. No one should be pressuring anyone, but there should be a boundary, right? And whatever that is, it might be very personal for someone. For some people, it's, I won't sleep with someone until we're committed, until I know that you're not with anyone else. And so have the conversation, say it, speak up, tell them what you need. Here's how I'm feeling. You know, I really like you. I think this is going well. Tell them what you need. I need to know that you're committed before I can do that. And then have a boundary. So you say, is that, you know, can you do that? Is that something you agree to? And if not, then what's going to happen? There's a consequence to the boundary. And this is kind of a general way of communicating that works really, really well, not only for the commitment conversation, but for everything. There needs to be a consequence, right? It's like if you ask for the commitment and then the guy says, well, no, I'm just gonna like, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. And you're like, okay, well, I'll just go be your girlfriend anyway. Then there's no, you're not gonna get what you want. You're just going to stay in that limbo stage. So there needs to be a consequence. And that can be tricky. I help people with this communication tip and way of communicating. And usually they think about the consequence as black and white, like either I'm going to be with you or I'm going to leave you. And it's like, there's so many other gray area things that could be a consequence, right? If you are not ready to commit, then I'm not going to stay the night. You know, it doesn't mean I'm breaking up with you. It just means we're not there yet. If you're not ready to commit, then I'm going to keep dating other people and, you know, see how that goes. Like, there's a lot of different ways that you could do that. But have the conversation, because, and not too soon, right? You don't want to try to, like, pressure anyone into a relationship too soon. And usually when people need that validation and reassurance really early on, it's just because they have fear and they have insecurity, and this is totally normal and acceptable. Like, we all have that. But instead of forcing the commitment, just be honest about how you feel. I feel nervous. I've been hurt before. Like, I need to take my time. Like, we can have these conversations in a healthy way.
I'm going to ask you this question because Angela and I talk about ghosting in previous podcast episodes. And what should you do and not do when someone ghosts you in the dating?
And first I'll start with the reason why ghosting exists. The reason that ghosting exists is that there are people that when you try to reject them, they will come back at you and be horrible and mean and say things that they should not be saying, or they act really desperate. Again, when we're dealing with the general population, like, there's a little bit of everything. So I don't like ghosting. I don't think that people should ghost. I think we need to be mature and have mature conversations and tell people our, you know, how things are. But sometimes people kind of go AWOL and crazy after hearing that. So if you get ghosted, the first thing I would say don't do is don't text them more than two, maybe three times tops. So don't, you know, where are you? What's going on? I thought everything was going well. Do not do that. You can send them one message that's like something that will get a response. Like, hey, can I ask you a question? That works well for like getting people to come back and be like, yeah, sure, because they're curious, they want to know, or find a question to ask them, or send them something cute that reminds them of you. You know, maybe you guys had a conversation about Disney and you send them something related and just ask them a question. But if they don't respond, then the second message should be something like, I haven't heard from you. And maybe you have an idea of like they need space or whatever, but you just want to say something like, I haven't heard from you. I'd like to hear from you, but I'm going to give you some space and I'm not going to reach out. And then you let it go. And if they don't reply to that, then they are ghosting you. Like, that's the hard part about ghosting, is when you're like, but I don't know if they're ghosting me. Are they just busy? Are they just whatever? But if you write something like, I haven't heard from you, I'd like to hear from you, can you tell me what's going on? And they don't respond, then. And the deeper work there is about recognizing that it doesn't mean anything about you. It doesn't mean that you're not good enough. It doesn't mean that you're going to be alone forever. You know, that's the big problem, is when people get rejected, it's hard. And when you get ghosted, it's even harder because you just don't understand and there's confusion and all of that. You can try calling again once, not 38 times. And yeah, other than that, don't do anything stalkery. You know, I think a lot of people get this like question in their head, like, well, what if he had a heart attack? What if he's alone in his house and nobody knows and I need to show up there? And it's like, no, he probably has people in his life that will help figure that out, right? Yeah, what do you guys say about ghosting?
I'm trying to remember. I think a lot of it was from my side that it's an opportunity to see all of your neuroses and your, oh, like, you just beautifully explained, like, what if they had this happen? And, oh, what's wrong with me? And so it's an opportunity to just chill out and listen to all of that rubbish inside and just say it's not about me. Do you remember, Patty, what we were sharing about that, about not making, taking it personal?
I think that was about not taking it personal and just realizing that it's, you know, you aren't going to get the answers that you sometimes want, unfortunately. And it is hard to let it go, but as time goes on, you may never find out why or what you did, or maybe it was nothing you did. You just will never know, possibly. And then again, you may find out later. But it's hard, it's hurtful, and all of those things. We talked about that.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I love the feminine flow practice so much, because it's a way of getting out of your head and into your body. And it can make all the difference in the world, because if I say don't think of a pink elephant, you can't help but think of the pink elephant. If I say don't think about the guy that ghosted me, don't think about the guy that ghosted me. Why did he ghost me? It's so hard to stop the ruminating and the worrying. And if you just sit down to meditate, that's all that's going to be playing in your mind over and over again. It can be really difficult for people to get to a level in their meditation where they can really let go of things. It's not impossible. It's very possible. But with feminine flow, it's kind of like getting into a meditative state, but then also like having music that fills you up and being able to move your body so that you're in your body and feeling your body. And all of a sudden you're not thinking about that guy anymore. You're not thinking about the pink elephant. You really are able to let it go, rest and relax and express. And if it brings up these deeper triggering emotions from your childhood wounds or your past relationships, doing your feminine flow is an opportunity to let those emotions move in your body and not feel stuck and not be repressed, and actually bring it out into the light. You know, Brené Brown says that shame grows in the deep, dark places like mold. And so when we can bring those feelings out into the open, not just sharing them with people, but even just sharing it with yourself and expressing it and feeling it and moving your body with it, it can be so freeing and such a better experience than just trying to like shove it down and pretend it doesn't matter and like put on a happy face and keep moving on, right? Sometimes we need to excavate and, you know, clean out the wounds of the infection and not just like let it sit there with a Band-Aid on it. Ugh, I don't
want to
even think about that visual.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You need to be able to feel it. And we talk about journaling your thoughts and your feelings and all of that. And we also talked about meditation as well. But
yeah. And those are great too. You know, there's a lot of different tools and ways that we can work through things. And, you know, awareness is always the first step, right? If you're not even sure what's happening or what you're doing or why you're doing it, then it can be really hard to work through it or fix it. So awareness is that first step, but then it takes some conscious effort to do the journaling practice or to do the meditation practice or to do the feminine flow practice or to do whatever it is that's going to maybe not be very comfortable, right? Like, again, with this modern world, it's like we just want comfort and ease and pleasure all the time, and that's not realistic of life because life has its ups and downs, and sometimes we have to feel the pain and be able to work through it, and that will get us to the final destination so much faster than trying to pretend or pause or ignore certain feelings that are being brought up in the dating process.
What would you tell people out there that haven't been in the dating world for many years and they don't know how to start the dating process and what is common practice in the dating world and all of those things, because they may have been with a partner for a long time or just weren't ready to date, all of those different things that people have.
Hear it all the time. The first thing that I would want to tell them is it only takes one, right? Like, there's all these strategies and all this information and all this stuff, but some people don't need that. Some people, you know, they get divorced and they spend some time just working on themselves, and then they go out there and they meet someone and it just happens that that's the person and then that's the relationship. And so we don't have to overcomplicate things that, you know, sometimes it's very simple. It only takes one person. So even if you're in a city like New York City where dating is very challenging, really you're only looking for that one person that makes a difference. So it's okay to go out there and try. Usually people that come to me, they have already tried. It's kind of like no one goes to a health coach first thing top of mind. It's usually that they've been trying to fix some issue and having trouble with it. And so I work with a lot of people that have been frustrated or they've been hurt before, or they know that they're carrying around, you know, call it whatever you will, baggage or old fears, old limiting beliefs. If you're carrying that stuff around, we've got to do some deep healing work before you go out and try to date, or else it's just going to keep getting in your way. I would tell them it only takes one. I would also tell them, call me. I do a free consultation with anyone, so I can help them come up with a strategy, recognize what their patterns are and what they need to be focusing on, how to meet people, whether it's online or in person. There's so many ways now, and a lot of people feel stuck. Like, well, I just don't go out and I work from home and I don't know how to meet people. Like, that's a big part of what I do is I teach people, here's how you meet people. So that's an important piece. If you're not meeting people to date, then you're never going to date and you're not going to find your person. They're not going to just show up in your living room while you're Netflix and chilling by yourself. It's just, that's not how the world works. And I think a lot of women and probably men out there too, just wish that it was that easy, right? I just wish I had a partner, but I don't want to do all the work to go out and do it. And I would also say, enjoy the process. Right? We talked about that. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. Do things you want to do. Like, don't agree to a date that you don't want to go on or something you don't want to do. Like, it's your life too. Have fun with it. Make it fun. And don't just look for the spark. Bring the spark. Bring your own spark. Be madly in love with yourself on this date. Have so much fun doing whatever it is that you're doing. I think so many people nowadays are just kind of like, okay, entertain me, you know, like this TikTok generation. I know you're not probably in the middle of that, but it's very pervasive. I mean, of people of all ages now, their attention spans are short, their expectations are long, and it can really be a recipe that doesn't taste great in the end. So, but it's worth it. Like, that's the other thing I want to say is, if dating has been challenging or relationships have been challenging for someone and you just want to give up on it, it's okay to have those moments. Sometimes we do need to take a step back and take a break and just focus on ourselves and not worry about it. But I promise you that urge is going to come back at some point. At some point, you're going to start to have that desire to be with somebody again. It's innate, it's primal, it's in our DNA. It's really hard to turn it off. And so there is something about love and having a partner that makes it all worth it. Even if it's not perfect, even if it takes challenge, it's worth it, right? There's something really beautiful and magical about it. And I know I'm so grateful to have the relationship that I have. And, you know, I've been sick this past week and my partner has just stepped up and he's doing more and being supportive and kind. And it's like, I'm just so grateful all the time that I have a loving partner.
So Whitney, it's come to my awareness from what you're sharing that dating in the digital age is actually helping people to have better relationships. So at the end of the podcast, we often ask our guests, how does your area, such as dating in the digital age, how does it actually help people to build better relationships? What's different now in the digital world that's making people be better at relationships?
Yeah, I love that question because so many people want to focus on the negatives that have come from it. But number one, about 1 in 3 marriages today start from an online introduction.
Wow.
So it is working for people. And the number one site responsible for marriages is Tinder.
Wow.
So even though people have all these assumptions and beliefs that, you know, Tinder's just for hookups and whatever, it's not true. People are coming together through online dating. They are getting committed and married. There's so many resources out there. So if you have healing work to do, like, you can contact me. There's people on YouTube. Like, there's so much information out there now that, you know, 30 years ago, if you were in a toxic relationship, you didn't have anyone to talk to except your friends and your mom, maybe. And nowadays, there's just so much information and resources and therapists and coaches and people that I think that's one way that technology has really helped is that we have this knowledge and ability to do better. To have better relationships, to be better with ourselves as well as with another person.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's weird. Like, it's weird what's happening. There's people that have like AI girlfriends and boyfriends now.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you can program an AI to be your boyfriend and it'll message you, like, how are you today? And, you know, and so on the short term, you might think that's a benefit because people get this, you know, but in
intimacy.
The long term, it's like taking some of the humanity away. And it's a little bit frightening and weird, but I'm still a fan of, you know, falling in love with real people.
Yeah, it'll be our next podcast episode will be how to date in a world with artificial people or intelligence.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And they're trying to use it to teach people emotional intelligence for young people as well, which I have some concerns about because the machine doesn't actually have consciousness. So how do young people feel when what they're relating to is not actually conscious? It's just programs and what do you call it? The things that run all of those programs, they're just data. So there's no consciousness there. And then there's some people who actually talk about that the artificial intelligence is a consciousness. So there's a debate, mental debate about that, which is important because some people actually believe that it is alive, or there's a potential it could be developing consciousness. But anyway, we'll explore that some other time, Whitney. I think you're an advocate for the human touch, the human connection. And how can our listeners find you, Whitney, and contact you about your services?
Yeah, the easiest way is through my website, which is just my name, Whitney Cobrin, K-O-B-R-I-N, .com, WhitneyCobrin.com. And on my site, there's an opportunity to book a free session with me. So that's what I would encourage is let's talk. Let's talk about your particular situation. I do work with men sometimes if they're coming to me for the right reasons. I've had some men that are really looking for love and looking for the right stuff. And so I will work with them one-on-one. But I do primarily work with women who are looking for love. It's out there.
Beautiful. Thank you, Whitney. And is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners?
No, just thank you both for this opportunity. And it was so lovely to meet you, but I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. Please share the podcast with others and check out Whitney's services and products. We will have Whitney's contact information in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Building Better Relationships with Angela and Patty. Send us a message and please like or share the podcast or donate with the Anchor Donate button. We really value your feedback.